chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest my dab in the middle of it. Rest my dab in the middle. We are rest my dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot going on this week. We've just had the conclusion of the World Economic Forum that meets annually in Davos, Switzerland. And I've been monitoring it all week, and in just a small clip here, I could not begin to elaborate, even though DeSantos was dissing it the other day at a press conference. We're going to play a clip there from, and so forth. But it's just a big meeting of 1,500 corporations, largest ones in the world. And they put themselves out as the great saviors of the world, you know, and they're going to save us against ecological problems and this so forth, economics and financials and everything. But what they're doing is they're building a one world government in order to subject us to the ultimate slavery through digital, you know, money and everything else. But anyway, here we go with Greg Reese. He gets in transcendental meditation and hypnosis as means by which to control us or to release us from this hypnotic spell that the government and all these elites have us under. But here we go with Greg Reese with a really fine 5-minute, you could say, pronouncement. Here we go next.
In 2003, the CIA released a classified document with the subject heading Analysis and Assessment of Gateway Process, a process that utilizes audio frequencies to achieve brain hemisphere synchronization. In order to provide a thorough evaluation, the document covers the techniques of hypnosis, biofeedback, and transcendental meditation, thereby providing a modern scientific account of an ancient guarded knowledge of mankind's spiritual potential, a potential that could save humanity from the mind control tactics being used to divide and enslave us. The left brain is the mind's verbal and linear reasoning component. It categorizes and assigns meaning to incoming stimuli and passes this resulting information to the right brain, which is non-critical and accepts whatever information it is given without question. The left brain is the ego mind. It operates on autopilot and can be easily swayed by external stimuli. Most of us are unaware of this because we naturally tend to identify ourselves with the ego. We think that the ego is who we are, but in fact, it is just a part of our mental processing. The right brain is our subconscious mind, and hypnosis is a technique of directly accessing the subconscious by disengaging the ego, giving us self-awareness and control over the subconscious mind. Transcendental meditation achieves this by practicing single-minded concentration of drawing energy up from the base of the spinal cord and into the brain. With practice, this visual concentration eventually polarizes the cortex, bringing both hemispheres into balance, allowing the individual to transcend the ego mind. With biofeedback, rather than suppressing the left brain as done with hypnosis or ignoring it as done with meditation, the practitioner programs the ego mind with visualization while monitoring the physiological response. thereby programming the subconscious mind by observing the results with real-time biological feedback. The gateway process, also known as HemiSync, achieves this same goal by simply listening to specific audio frequencies that bring both hemispheres of the brain into synchronicity with one another. All of these practices, some of which have been taught for millennia, have been proven effective with modern scientific tools. The gateway process has been shown to bring the entire body into a coherent vibration of approximately 7 to 7.5 cycles per second, which then creates a resonance with the electrostatic field of the Earth. It is believed that this resonance is what allows the practitioner to transcend time and space, or in other words, allow their consciousness to leave the body without limitation. What we call physical matter is not solid at all. It is more like a highly advanced holographic image made up of different frequencies. What we experience as solid matter is actually the electromagnetic repulsion of certain frequencies, and this includes our own physical body. And so it is believed that the reason these practices work is because our consciousness is not being generated by our bodies, but rather our bodies are being generated by our consciousness. Physicists have proven that the physical world is energy and define time as a measurement of change within this energy. In order for energy to take form, it needs to be limited to a specific vibration. Energy at rest is uniformly extended without limit. It is everywhere at once. This is why humans are able to remote view, which is a term used by the military for their psychic training protocol, wherein they teach an individual to transcend space and time in order to gather information remotely. And this is how Mr. Guy Savelli was able to drop a goat from 100 feet away with his thoughts. But most importantly, the suppression of this knowledge is how the government is able to program your subconscious mind for you, without you even knowing it, and control what you perceive to be reality. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Greg Reese is ingenious at putting together very, very fine pronouncements and briefings, I should say, that have really a great impact and reveal and give us so much insight. Next is DeSantos at a press conference in Florida, and what he says about Davos and how their influence in the world is very negative, especially the United States. So he's really down on Davos. And then after that, we'll have Andrew Huff and Alex talking about the Wuhan. Andrew Huff has written a book, a fine book that I have in my possession. I've read it already. But anyway, here we go with DeSantos at a news conference. And you could say that this is a really fine report, and TheHill.tv is presenting it. Here we go next.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis denounced the upcoming World Economic Forum being held in Davos next week, taking the opportunity to note that Florida is not open to embracing any policy ideas that might come from the meeting. Let's watch.
They do this thing in Davos. They're doing it next week. All these elites come in, the World Economic Forum, and basically, their vision is they run everything, and everybody else is just like a serf. Like a peasant. They say they're going after energy, ESG, all these other things. And you see the Biden administration wants to nix gas stoves. Are you kidding me? Like I want gas stoves. I mean, imagine how many people had the hurricane come through, didn't have power right away, but were able to turn on some. So you cannot go down this road, but that's exactly what they want to do. And it's really weakening Western society, Western values, but underlying a lot of that is the CCP.
He was referring to the Chinese Communist Party there. He also made it clear in the press conference that he will seek to curb China's influence in the Sunshine State.
The 53rd annual meeting will take place in Davos, Switzerland, and is set to see record turnout featuring 52 heads of state and about 600 CEOs. Climate envoy John Kerry will represent the United States. Look, I got to say, all those heads of states and the hundreds of CEOs does not sound like a especially good time from my perspective. You know, I think that this is probably a wise political move. It's always healthy to make an attack against elites, and certainly this is the most elite of elite bunches gathering here at Davos. Of course, there is always this kind of what seems from my perspective to be a little bit of not quite related culture war-ish jab mixed in there with the gas stoves. Look, I love a gas stove as much as anybody. It takes my electric stove forever to heat up, and my omelets haven't been the same since I moved into my new apartment.
Oh, you went from gas to electric?
I went from gas to electric.
Ooh, that's devastating.
But it's also true that, 12.7% of all childhood asthma cases are caused by gas stoves, and people should be informed about the health risks. Yeah, the health consequences of gas stoves are only just now being understood and reported on. So it's a serious issue. Maybe you don't care. Maybe your kids are grown, but other people care. I'm not saying there should necessarily be a ban, but, you know, pretending like there's not downsides to this or that it's just a random draconian edict coming down from on high is also a little absurd. So what do you make of this kind of political move from DeSantis to say, hey, I'm anti-Davos?
I think it's a sign of the ascendancy of a kind of right and left populism, you know, the fusion of that, which is very anti-Davos mindset. You know, the World Economic Forum brings together all these heads of state, former heads of state, current heads of state, and corporate partners, powerful elites, who all have a lot of similar ideas and similar goals on economics, on a lot of climate stuff. Since COVID, there's been a lot of how can we use the COVID emergency to the Great Reset is what it's called. How can society be better planned from here on out? And unlike Ron DeSantis, I don't think every idea that would come out of this meeting would necessarily be bad. But I think the concerns are well founded, which is that it's a little bit of the technocratic elite has a lot of blind spots, is not very down with democratic decision making, and also not very down necessarily with civil liberties, because those can get in the way. I think they saw that with COVID, that people don't want to be required necessarily to take vaccines and other things, don't want to be required to wear masks forever. It may have contrasting views that is frustrating to the elites and confounds their ability to kind of like plan and organize society in the fashion that they want. And that's also part of the China aspect of this, which is, you know, the whole kind of global, and I think trade is good, but one of the issues with, you know, trading with China and being more open with China is we've kind of inadvertently brought in some of the Chinese government's closed-mindedness toward criticism and free speech is actually being imported into not exactly Western culture, but Western decision making with our governments and our businesses. You know, people self-censor, institutions self-censoring in order to not get priced out of the Chinese market.
This is
very bad.
This is the point that Fatia sometimes makes about Elon Musk in China and failure to critique because of his factories.
Or the NBA or Activision Blizzard or, you know, any number of U.S. celebrities or political figures or institutions, private, which it's a weird situation because they have the right to do. They have the free speech right to, you know, not want any criticism of China, but they're doing it because an authoritarian government that we have no control over wants that.
Yeah, and money talks. You know, LeBron James gets a talking to from the NBA when he makes some anti-China comments, and people care about their contracts and how much they're able to earn. And that's, I think, precisely why this particular aggregation of human beings at Davos is concerning, because when you look at what aligns them, what interests that they all share, it's very elite financial interest, and it's not the interest of the overwhelming majority of people who live on this planet.
And it speaks to a concern that I think a lot of our viewers have, a lot of, you know, independent-minded people, right and left, which is that actually the elites have so much in common. You know, they say they're Republican, they say they're Democrat, but there's so much agreement, there's so much social cooperation, so enjoyment of each other's company.
Precisely.
You're not in that meeting. You're not, you know, in those smoke-filled rooms. Well, they're not smoke-filled,
they're
I don't think.
At
Davos, they're definitely not smoke-filled.
They allow proper ovens, Robbie.
Unfortunately, there's no smoking in those rooms. So it's shielded from view. And I think it presents certain concerns. Obviously, you can go too far and be a little conspiratorial about how bad it is or something. You know, I think some of their economic ideas are probably good, but should be embraced or allowed or be voted on. And it's still up to individual countries. Like, the U.S., we're our own country. We have a respect for civil liberties, you know, on not just respect, but legally required under our Constitution. So you can't just say, oh, we all went off to Davos and decided this is a good policy. Now it's going to be imposed on the people of the U.S. or of Canada or of Mexico or of any country. No, we get to decide.
Right. But that's, I think the concern people have is that this stuff gets snuck in through the back door. I mean, we just had this 4,000 pages of legislation that was rushed through right before Christmas.
No one read it.
But nobody read. And this is one of the asks from the 20 Freedom Caucus people who were just holding up the speakership vote last week. And one of the asks that they secured, which is that they have to have single issue bills. Or at least there has to be a single issue title on the bill. There's a little bit of warbliness right. about what they were actually given.
Imagine if it was debated, actual provision,
right.
instead of at the last minute snuck into a document that is far too long for anyone to read it, and then you have to vote on it immediately, and you have to vote yes because the whole country's economy will collapse if we just all of a sudden didn't have a
right.
budget. So nobody can vote against it. I mean,
right.
still they do. If it was going to actually, if the vote against it was actually going to succeed, no one could vote for it.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
It's so unserious.
Yeah.
Because some of the stuff in that bill should not be voted
most,
for, should be rejected.
Most
Tons
certainly.
Of it should be rejected, but you don't get to do that because they cram it all in, they put it up there at once, it's
and
so
they don't
bad.
Give you time to read it. So another, I think one of the asks that they secured was, I think, a 72-hour period before a bill was passed where people mm-hmm. have an opportunity. I mean, it's still a very short time to read all of those pages with any kind of precision or depth, but I think they're moving in the right direction, and there's some important populist asks that came through mm-hmm. that are getting really, underanalyzed and underappreciated by the liberal media.
Well, and previously, the vast majority of congressional representatives in both parties had no say or input in what was going into that package.
Right.
It's the speaker and a handful of other powerful people in both parties
right.
get together and decide, and then you have to vote for it.
Yeah, that 4,000-page document we're talking about was a Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi special, you know, that is a bipartisan, secretive, non-transparent special. So it's interesting that there are these parallels between the problem with Congress and the problem with Davos mm-hmm. being the lack of transparency and democracy.
Yeah, this is why we always have to hold the elite's feet to the fire.
Yeah.
More Rising right after this. Stay with us.
Some people out there that are denouncing this, I've been trying to go to that World Economic Forum for about 4 or 5 years, but they won't credential me. They said I could go to some alternative thing 1 year. But anyway, they won't credential me over there. I've been trying to go there and report on it live on the ground, but I just couldn't get it done. They just want a bunch of yes people out there saying, you know, oh, this World Economic Forum, you know, forum is so great and everything, so forth. But anyway, next we have Andrew Huff that wrote The Secret of Wuhan. He wrote The Secret of Wuhan, and it's about the Wuhan lab. And he was with the Echo Health Alliance as a vice president. He has quite a bit to say about how that all started and who was behind it and so forth. But here we go next with Andrew Huff and Alex.
You found it, the tip of the spear. It is the Alex Jones Show.
And the book, The Truth About Wuhan, How I Uncovered the Biggest Lie in History, by Dr. Andrew G. Huff, former EcoHealth Alliance Vice President and Senior Scientist. He's here with us now. Regardless of whether they released it or not, you're saying it's man-made gain of function. But I see the pre-programming, the UN, Disease X, the power grab, the lockdowns, the Great Reset, the New World Order, all of it. Continue.
Well, so going back to where we left off. So the Chinese Communist Party's I analyzed the Chinese Communist Party's objectives, and I discussed this in my book. I do a sort of an intelligence scenario analysis looking at what would be their motive and whose motive for releasing this? And so the first thing you logically do is you have to eliminate all the other people that would possibly want to do this. So you could say this could have been a false flag attack from the U.S. government. The Chinese could intentionally release it. It could have been an accident. It could be a combination of events, actually. You know, maybe it was an accidentally released, and then they intentionally released something to throw people off. These are all possible scenarios. The thing is, the Chinese Communist Party from 2016 to 2018, they have very clear objectives. They want to increase the size of the party by 1 million people. They want to be the global superpower. They want to with those two objectives alone, if they intentionally release the agent on their own soil, it undermines those two objectives. And the thing that we have to remember here is this has been a terrible disaster for the Chinese people as well. They've lost, you know, millions of people too. They've actually had their GDPs went down after the agent is released. And the other thing that happens is everyone now is questioning China. It doesn't look like, at least the how people perceive China, it actually weakens their position.
Andrew, I want to agree with you 1,000% here. It's a globalist group above China that used that lab as the pretext to set them up. I don't think China launches as a weapon. I think the globalist WF-UN combine that already have their responses ready, they're pre-programming them, telling us the pandemic's imminent, we're going to bring in world government through the pandemic. I think that globalist group put it there to be able to set China up. Not that I like communist China. I don't think Chinese government launched this. I think the globalists launched this in China for plausible deniability.
That's certainly possible, and that would sort of be like a lone wolf or insider type attack where maybe they bribe some employees who worked at the laboratory.
Well, a few operatives, they're in the death cult.
The death cult? Well, I don't know about that, but the issue here is if you look at intent, those are all very high-risk activities. It's certainly possible. I think it's more the case that after this leaks, the globalists all pile on board and get on the same plan. So
they use the crisis.
They use the crisis. You never let a good crisis go to waste, like Rahm Emanuel used to say. So the one thing you have to realize about organizations like the World Economic Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, now the Gates Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, the Rothschilds, all these old, huge, wealthy families and organizations, Google Foundation, they have business intelligence units which are similar to what governments have. And in these business intelligence units, they have 20, 30, 40 analysts sitting there collecting information, analyzing things going on. They collect human intelligence like the government does. I mean, they're running similar kinds of intelligence.
Yeah, intelligence agencies just aren't in governments.
Correct. They're also in businesses and corporations and other non-governmental organizations. So what I think happens, and what I strongly suspect happens, is that they all catch wind of this earlier than everybody else. So like I said, I was just snooping around. I caught it by accident in mid-December 2019. Well, if you have analysts who are going around looking for this stuff all the time, of course they probably picked up on it earlier.
So they jump on the trend.
Exactly. And then they go talk to their friends. So all these people who had partnered up at the World Economic Foundation, that's one place where they all come together. I was actually invited to attend back in 2015, and I didn't go. And my views on that organization has sure shifted along the way. So these people all know each other. You know, I can imagine Bill Gates getting on his phone, texting Soros, saying, "Hey, there's something going on here. Let's get on board here. Here's a chance for us to push something." And if you look at how the Gates Foundation specifically is invested into vaccine technology, other things that end up coming down.
Well, that was my next question, because I want to believe they're super centralized and know what they're doing, and overall they do. He was bragging on TV 3 years ago, "I make 22 times the money on vaccine investment." But now they pushed a dangerous mRNA that doesn't protect and hurts people. If I wanted to destroy myself, I would just set myself on fire versus this. I mean, they have made themselves the villains. The world know they're behind it. What do you make of the so-called vaccine and the carnage?
Well, my position has shifted. So actually, I probably didn't do enough research when the mRNA jab first came out. I was actually recommending that people get it. I was a little skeptical and worried about actually negative or adverse events from it. So I waited 3 months because I'm an infectious disease epidemiologist. The government in my state said that you could be one of the first people to get it, but I waited. And about 3 months later, I start looking at histopathology reports, and I start seeing tissue damage in reproductive tissues and ovaries in women. Well, at that point, they're dangling the carrot over me to travel, and I go, maybe this only affects females. I'm a male. I get jabbed. So I go get my two doses of Moderna, and I'm not some kind of anti-vaxxer. Because I was in the military and I worked in this field, I probably have three sheets long of a vaccine record of things I've had to be inoculated with. Well, this is the sickest I've ever been in my life, and then the epidemiology data starts to come in from what we're told, what the performance of this mRNA jab was versus the reality. So it doesn't look. First, we find out that the jabs do not prevent infectious disease transmission. Okay, and that is the whole reason why public health officials, or why we typically recommended that you vaccinate an entire population. And they were talking about that early on. All of a sudden, well, the vaccine doesn't prevent transmission. I don't even like calling it a vaccine because it's actually a gene therapy. And executives from like Baxter.
Sure, so why would they bet on something that in rat studies, similar shots cause major health problems for rats? I don't think they're that stupid.
Well, I mean, this is where you can start asking questions. I don't know if they're that stupid, but I think they are that greedy.
And they thought, we control the media, just do it.
Well, it's not that they just control the media. There's a cover-up mentality to this. So once they find out that the mRNA jab could have adverse events or side effects, they start pushing it on, and they keep on even pushing it, though, even though it doesn't stop transmission, and there are problems associated with it for some people. If you jab everyone in the population, there's no control group to compare against. So it makes it much more difficult to then conduct scientific studies or launch lawsuits against the pharmaceutical companies if everyone's jabbed. Because
and if you give it to children, exactly, there's no control group. If you give it to children, though, then vaccine liability protection kicks in.
I didn't know that. Is that true?
Yeah. If a governor even mandates it nationwide, then it protects it from liability.
Oh, interesting. Well, I mean, the vaccine immunity is really interesting in this specific case, though, too. So if these documents came out last week, is that the emergency use authorization for the mRNA jab. So first of all, they discount the other drugs that work. So hydroxychloroquine, Pepcid AC, zinc, vitamin D, all these things that work. And they didn't tell people to get healthy. So they discount all these things. They lie and they fabricate that to get the emergency use authorization. And that's all pushed through the Department of Defense. And they did it as a national emergency biowarfare pandemic type.
Which bypassed all the regular checks and balances.
Correct. And so it didn't come from NIH like everyone thinks. So you start to look at this, why we're doing this and why they want mRNA. So the interesting history here behind mRNA, and this is where Dr. Malone is a great person to talk to, is that mRNA technology was built because we have a fundamental problem in medicine and public health. Traditional vaccines take too long to manufacture. They take 9 months, best case scenario. And so if you're a national security person working in biowarfare, bioterrorism, or you're a senior public health official, we have a real problem. So a pandemic happens. You have an infectious disease outbreak, and it looks like it turned into a pandemic, and it happens quickly. Well, if you don't have a drug or a countermeasure for that, you're toast. Well, you could be. If you see, as you look at SARS-CoV-2, it actually wasn't that bad in terms of morbidity and mortality later stages of the disease. So the Department of Defense, the Department of Homeland Security sub-agencies, they want, and public health agencies like Health and Human Services, they want a platform that they can rapidly modify to match whatever disease emerges.
Stay right there. Stay rammed through mRNA. We'll be right back.
To the town of Avri, who rode a stranger one fine day.
And the accumulated amount is now trapping as much extra heat as would be released by 600,000 Hiroshima-class atomic bombs exploding every single day on the Earth. That's what's boiling the oceans, creating these atmospheric rivers and the rain bombs and sucking the moisture out of the land and creating the droughts and melting the ice and raising the sea level and causing these waves of climate refugees predicted to reach 1 billion in this century. Look at the xenophobia and political authoritarian trends that have come from just a few million refugees. What about 1 billion? We would lose our capacity for self-governance on this world. We have to act. So in answer to your question, I would say we have to have a sense of urgency much greater than we have yet had, and we need have had, and we need to make some changes.
After you took the COVID shot, you said you got the sickest ever, and that's what everybody's saying, is they would never have taken the COVID shot to do what it did. The studies, the numbers, you're an expert on this, are showing it's really hurting our immune systems.
Oh, it's completely hurting our immune systems. So if you actually look at the population health data from places like Scotland, for example, where they had high vaccine compliance, so they nearly vaccinated the entire population in Scotland. And when you look at the results of the blood analyses, lymphocyte, neutrophil counts, O-type immunity, it was virtually destroyed. And there's more and more publications coming out by the day that indicate the mRNA jabs and the bivalent, the new bivalent jabs are actually destroying immunity.
Now, you're saying they didn't do this on purpose, and I respect you, but you, I think you have your own bias as a good person projected onto it. I go for hours. They had documents years ago at University of Texas that corona mRNA, as you were saying earlier, therapies cause massive problems. They work for some animals, some rats, some humans, but they cause massive problems with others. I mean, I saw this a few months ago, a test with mRNA and gene therapy in New York, and the one person that tested it died. So as Malone has said, they tried for decades to get this through. They wish it would work, but it's like Russian roulette. And so I pull back when they know. Let's just say this. They know now it doesn't protect you. I've got CNN articles yesterday saying scientists at FDA angry that vaccine doesn't work and they were lied to and actually makes you sicker. I mean, I've got the headlines. I'll show them here while you're talking. So now that they know, they're not still admitting they're wrong. And I get your argument. You could say, well, they never admit they're wrong. Like Trump keeps saying it's perfect. I couldn't bring myself to play it yesterday. It was on Newsmax. And it was just disgusting, like 5 minutes of him. Oh, we stopped the Spanish flu. We saved 50 million people. Oh, no one's hurt. It works perfect. I mean, he is the worst now on that. I don't think he's a bad person, but God, is he pigheaded.
No, and I think it's actually undermining his chances to be nominated to run for president again. If you look at, I think, the Republicans and conservatives and libertarians who tend to align with President Trump or that party, the fact that he can't come out and admit that this Operation Warp Speed and the mRNA jabs have been a mistake.
He could blame the Fauci that told him to do it.
Just going
to
say that. He could probably go to blame Fauci and Burks.
Because that's who did it.
Well, and I think that'd be a smart political move.
I mean, look, everybody forgives DeSantis. He said, I did it early on, I was wrong. They're lying. That's okay. We understand.
Well, and people make mistakes, and I think actually.
Don't you become an accessory by then once you know? That's what I was saying. It's like they all know now.
Well, I think they are accessories, and here's the strange part of this. If Congress gets off its butt and does its job, there are strong criminal penalties that I think could be justified for numerous high-level bureaucrats and technocrats. I mean, I've said it on social media a number of times. Dr. Anthony Fauci should be facing the death penalty. And I don't think that's an overstatement. Millions of people have died. And what other genocidal maniac have we allowed to go free, at least not face a trial for the kinds of things that he's done? I mean, it is Nazi fascism, exactly.
And quantify that, because you're an expert, trained, certified, degrees in this, FBI, Defense Department, everything. Explain to people, you don't do gain of function because it could get out. It's illegal. That's life in prison. When you know about it in light of Congress, it's death penalty. And it's not about a fetish to kill Fauci, but I mean, literally, we need to scare other people and create a challenge to it so there's a major sort of Damocles over people's heads to think about this.
Oh, absolutely. And people like this actually then ties into other people. People like my former boss, Dr. Peter Daszak, Dr. Ralph Barrick at the University of North Carolina, Dr. Ian Lipkin at Columbia University. These people are all yes men and co-conspirators for not only the agent SARS-CoV-2, because the thing that everyone has to remember here, the biotechnology that the Chinese had at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, that came from the United States out of Ralph Barrick and Ian Lipkin's laboratories. The Chinese were actually 10 years roughly or so behind the United States.
Sure, so why did we jump them ahead?
Well, that's a great question. So I talk about this in my book, and this is why I say it's the biggest intelligence failure in U.S. history. So,
or they want plausible deniability.
Well, no, I don't think it's that they want plausible deniability. We actually gave, this is my belief, and I think I have good facts to support this. The United States gave advanced biotechnology to the Wuhan Institute of Virology so we could collect intelligence on it. So remember how I said that everybody in the national security world knew that the WIV was the bioweapons lab for the Chinese? Well, here's a fun question, let me ask. Do you think that the Chinese need $400,000 of U.S. money to do gain-of-function work?
No.
Do they need 5 million?
No.
Do they need 50 million?
No.
There's no number you could put on it. So what did the Chinese get out of this?
They're spying on both sides.
Well, exactly. So they need the advanced biotechnology. So this is what happens. This is the trade. So the United States government gives the advanced biotechnology to the WIV, So we can have access to their laboratory to inspect or sort of see what's going on there. Dr. Anthony Fauci, so when my story started gaining more prominence, I couldn't believe it. I felt like I was actually driving the White House for a period of months and with my attorney, Tom Renz. Dr. Anthony Fauci came out after I started saying this on social media and said, well, we need to see what's going on over at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Well, why does a Health and Human Services sub-agency director, Dr. Anthony Fauci, care what's happening?
We're almost out of time, and you invited me out to dinner. You're here this week. You've been on a bunch of shows. I'd love to go to dinner with you, but I'd really rather just say we're doing an emergency Saturday show, commercial-free, and come here tomorrow and talk to millions of people, because that's what I really want to do.
Let's do it.
And we can order a pizza. Okay, we'll talk to the crew.
We can do both, probably.
Let's do both. So let's just say a crew come in at about 10 a.m. Let's say tomorrow at noon.
Yeah, that works.
Let's tape commercial-free for like an hour and a half.
Okay.
So you can really just get all this out, because here's the bottom line. Where we're at currently, what are your final statements to the viewers and listeners they need to know?
Well, everyone needs to get active. And we're at, like I said, I've said this repeatedly, this is fifth generation warfare. We're at a critical turning point in human history, and we're all living through it. The COVID narrative was BS. The jabs are hurting people. The government is lying to us about these things. I know that many of you probably do not hold any value about contacting your representatives or elected officials. You need to get politically active. Send them an email.
Oh, most of them don't know.
What do you mean?
I'd love to say they're evil. Most of them, like you said, don't know. They're easily woken up. I agree with you. Most of these representatives don't even know what's going on.
Well, no, but they need to start hearing from your audience.
That's what I'm saying. They're not already done, folks. I agree. I'm saying they're ready to hear.
Well, I hope that they're ready to hear. I think the next couple weeks will be real telling whether or not the Uniparty is going to go away and the Republicans are actually going to do something. I sure hope that they actually get these committees.
So you're calling for a criminal investigation.
Well, I think I'm calling for a number of things. I want Congress to investigate. I want to see an investigation both on the Senate and the House side. Okay, and I want to see criminal referrals from Congress, and I'd like to see the executive branch of the government do an investigation, but that's not going to happen.
But so here's the deal. You're not a mad scientist. You're a scientist. You're what they really fear.
Well, that's why they came after me so hard. And the other thing that's going on right now is that in the state of Florida, DeSantis has created a committee or investigation to actually look at what's happening and potentially refer criminal charges. I believe the grand jury has convened related to some of these issues. So if the federal government's not going to do it, at least get in contact with your state representatives as well. Put pressure on your attorney general. We need to have charges brought against these people. They are criminals. What they're doing is the most...
And we're not pissing in the wind here. All over the world and here, Japan, Europe, it's happening. I mean,
It is. And the funny thing here is if you, this past week I was watching the World Economic Foundation.
Hold on. That's where I want to go next. So tomorrow, be here at 11. We'll tape at noon for an hour and a half, commercial free, learn about 4 p.m. tomorrow. Let's reconvene on how we go after them, how we stop them next.
Sounds good.
Drew, you ready to come into work tomorrow? Yes, sir. All right, I'll be here.
All right, sounds good, sir.
All right. I wasn't going to take my daughter fishing, but she can wait. All right, because she'll be dead if we don't stop this. So I kind of got to be here. All right, we'll be right back with Judge Andrew Napolitano, hour number four. Amazing job. The Truth About Wuhan, the new book by Dr. Andrew G. Huff.
The Secret About Wuhan. Yes, there's a lot to that. In fact, this guy has really, he's on the genius side of knowing how to use all the facilities and resources worldwide to identify even particles, even around some of the crematoriums there in Wuhan to identify what was going on. But next we have Judge Napolitano and Alex, and they had a sit down in his, an in-house interview. And they were talking about Napolitano real negative about what's going on in the country. And he says that administrative law is being way, way emphasized too much, and thus it's being used to override any, you could say, constitutional law. But well, I've been working on this for years myself. But anyway, to hear Napolitano say it at that level is really, really interesting and very forceful.
Judge Andrew Napolitano, an icon of American liberty and freedom that isn't swayed by left or right, but what's right, is here with us for the rest of the hour. Then Owen Schroeder takes over in 40 minutes for the War Room, 3 to 6 p.m. Central here at Infowars.com/show. So, Judge, I've got my questions, but I want you to be able to take over with.
Start with your questions. Well, I'm so happy to be here. I love being on your show, but being here in Austin with you, terrific.
Are you... optimistic about humanity? Are we starting to turn the page? Have we forced the deep state out in the open, or are we really losing? What do you make of the Davos group admitting we want to censor Americans? The deputy head of the EU unelected bureau saying that 2 days ago. Just all these statements about world government, new world order, we're saving you. It's like we're extraterrestrials that are going to save Earth. That's John Kerry 2 days ago. Really, you're a smart guy. What is your gut level about it? This is a football game where we are. Are we in the second quarter, the third, the fourth? Is the game over? Are we winning? What is it?
I'm sorry to say I'm not optimistic, Alex. I think that the United States of America, the federal government, will collapse of its own weight. It won't be able to pay its bills. No one will want to work for it, just like the old Soviet Union. And
so their hubris is taking us there.
Yes. And the country will break apart into a dozen or a half dozen or maybe more republics. Down here in Texas, there'll be a lot more freedom than where I live in the Northeast. But you'll be able to vote with your feet, as Ronald Reagan used to say, and go where you want to live. But there'll be no federal government. There'll be no Chuck Schumers and Nancy Pelosi's and even Kevin McCarthy's. As far as I'm concerned, it's the same party. It's the same big government party with a Republican wing and a Democrat wing. But that crowd won't be around anymore. Government will be smaller and more local and more responsive to the people. There'll be a fallout, of course, for that. I don't know when this is going to happen.
I'm about to say, what's the timeline?
I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime. It may happen in yours. It'll happen in the lifetime of your children and your grandchildren. So the next 25, 30, or 40 years. We can't keep going on like this. We're close to $32 trillion in debt. Pretty soon, the dollars in your pocket will be worthless.
Saudi Arabia is moving away from the petrodollar.
Right. Actually, pretty soon, you won't even have dollars in your pocket. Everything will be digital, and the feds will be able to control everything. And at some point, their control will collapse like a house of cards. What do you think?
I agree with that statement. I just don't know what to do.
Well, it just seems to be getting worse because the government doesn't care about the Constitution it has sworn to uphold. Its absolute mania for spying on us is out of control. The courts won't intercede. The courts won't intercede. The Supreme Court can't even figure out who stole Sam Alito's opinion and distributed it to the press.
And I noticed they hired the Chertoff group. That's like hiring the Fox to learn who killed the hen house.
Look, I've been very critical all day on my podcast, Judging Freedom, of John Roberts and their inability to figure out who did this. The people doing the investigation need subpoena power, meaning there's got to be a lawsuit or a criminal investigation. The court doesn't need me to tell them how to do their work. But without subpoena power, without the ability to put somebody under oath and ask them, how did you get your hands on this? Do you know who got their hands on this? They're never going to find out who did it.
Which is really one branch of government piercing another.
Correct. Correct. Someone's trying to undermine the court, either someone who was worried that the weakest link in that abortion decision would leave or that the weakest link needed to be persuaded to stay. Someone leaked that intentionally.
But the good news is it didn't really affect the court.
No, it didn't affect the court at all. Roe versus Wade, or at least the parts of Roe versus Wade that liberated people to kill babies in the womb was invalidated. It's now up to each individual.
Well, I'm not lionizing this court, but the establishment definitely doesn't like it. I think the intimidation of this court's backfiring.
I don't think they're a happy group, to be honest with you. I don't know where this is going to go. Some good things coming down the pike. I wrote a piece 2 weeks ago called Government by Experts, in which I've excoriated the administrative state, the EPA, the FDA, all these three-letter entities that write their own rules and enforce their own rules and interpret their own rules. This court is about to invalidate that by arguing that only the Congress can write the laws and not these various groups. The Bureau of Tobacco, Alcohol, and Firearms tried to write a regulation saying that if you put a bump stock on a rifle, it turns the rifle into a machine gun, and therefore it's unconstitutional.
Well, exactly. I don't want to be too positive here, but I see them saying a year and a half ago, you can't have carbon taxes through an agency and shut down U.S. industry at outside law. I see them saying no to all these anti-gun pieces of legislation, including stuff Trump did. I see them... Just basically, I hate to say it because I'm really negative about the courts, the shining thing right now is the Supreme Court. It's kind of like the best house in a bad neighborhood.
The whole purpose of an independent judiciary is to be anti-democratic. It is not there to reflect the will of the people. It is there to preserve the life, liberty, and property of the minority.
And now you're explaining, I'm interrupting, explain a republic versus democracy. This is key. Because people go, Judge Napolitano's against democracy. Well, yeah, 51% vote to kill all the black people, we don't do it.
Correct.
Or Hitler says, let's kill the Jews, they're a minority, you don't do it. Explain that.
Well, but democracy, the majority wins and the majority is right and the majority gets its way no matter how horrific it may be. Hitler was popularly elected.
Right.
That system was a majority. We have what is theoretically a republic so that our laws are enacted by representatives rather than by the mob. But the representatives reflect the will of the mob. The Supreme Court is there to make sure that your natural rights, your rights that come from your humanity, our rights don't come from the government, they come from within us. Whether you believe they are a gift from God the Father or they come from us because we are the highest rational beings on the planet. Our rights come from within us, and the court is to make sure, to make certain that the government doesn't trample those rights. When, this goes back 100 years ago to Woodrow Wilson, they created this fourth branch of government, the administrative state. It's not answerable to anybody. It writes its own laws. It interprets those laws. It enforces those laws.
That's really the deep state.
Correct.
So only the courts are perfectly positioned to challenge that.
Correct. And Neil Gorsuch, Justice Gorsuch, Donald Trump's first appointee to the court, has been waging a jihad against the administrative state by arguing that you are not responsive to the people. Only the Congress can write the rules that you're going to write. And thus far, he's persuaded the majority of the court to go along with it.
I was about to say, so we could be negative of Trump, and I've got big problems like you do, but man, did these Supreme Court justices,
it has tipped the scales in favor of more fidelity to the Constitution, without question. It's hard for me to criticize him because I've been his friend, but he's not worthy to be president of the United States.
Well, now, do you believe that's because of the ego problem?
Yes. Yes, I believe the ego problem.
Oh, take the shots.
Well,
CNN says the shots aren't working, and he still says they're great.
Well, he's wrong on that. I don't know what Fauci said to him in the back room, but he's dead wrong on that. I just watched your prior segment with the doctor, and it was absolutely terrific. Trump, I think, was advised he had to do this to get reelected. He had to support all the vaccines and support Fauci and support all that nonsense in order to get reelected. Remember when they announced the existence of the vaccine? The Monday after Election Day. So Trump, the people that persuaded him to do what he had to do turned on him.
Oh, absolutely. You're right.
Look, Trump has been an enemy of the deep state, and look at what the deep state did to him. They made his life miserable while he was in office. The government spying that I talked about at Fox, which caused me the hell that you recount.
Hold on, let's stay there. This is the big one when we come back. That's Andrew Napolitano in studio. This is amazing. Stay with us. All right. I could talk to this guy for 50 hours. Judge Andrew Napolitano is here in studio with us. What a brain. And I kind of feel bad asking him questions. I'd rather get him to give us the 35,000-foot view. Because if I disagree with anything he said, he was being conservative. He says not in his lifetime, maybe not mine, my kid's lifetime, it'll collapse, which I don't want it to do. I want to reform it because the collapse is going to be hellish. But I see when things rot, they accelerate, and everything's sped up nowadays. So I agree, if we were Rome another 100 years, I don't think we got 10 the way things are going. I mean, the mental illness, the crime, the decadence, just all of it is just, I see it everywhere. I don't know if America's got 5 years.
Well, the decadence and the crime and the rot is in the government, but we accept it and we almost expect it. You and I, Alex.
And that rolls down, though, the general.
It does it. But you and I, as far as I know, you and I are the only two public.
Oh, yeah, you're going to make that big point.
We're the only two public media people now criticizing Chris Ray for what he said to this gathering of left-wing globalists in Davos, Switzerland. And what he said was an admission that the FBI works with private enterprise. And it's dangerous. Yes, it's dangerous to your civil liberties, but the FBI is going to keep. Can we run the Chris Ray clip?
Let's play that clip one more time. Cue that up. This is a big deal. Here it is.
And I think the sophistication of the private sector is improving, and particularly important, the level of collaboration between the private sector and the government, especially the FBI, has, I think, made significant strides. Pretty much every technology we could talk about today, we see both great opportunity, but great dangers in the wrong hands.
Well, it already is in the wrong hands. It's in the FBI hands. This is Donald Trump's hand-selected person to replace Jim Comey and run the FBI.
Which I agree with you is Trump's biggest failure. I love hate relationship. He put in the worst people that were actually against him. But they wrote by the break, two breaks ago. And it's not about a suit and a horn. It's true. You and I, and then maybe Zero Hedge was doing some of it too. And believe me, I wish there was more people doing it. You were like, Trump's being spied on. There's a deep state. Intelligence agencies done a coup. They're censoring. They're manipulating elections. And they just basically drove you out for saying that. Now in hindsight, complete vindication.
Well, we learned. I had sources in the intelligence community who informed me that Trump was being spied on while he was Mr. Trump, while he was a candidate. And the spying was being done by British intelligence. When I revealed that at Fox, all hell broke loose. My bosses stuck with me. Rupert Murdoch stuck with me. But they dialed me back for about 10 days, and then they put me back on, and I didn't change my mind on anything. 3 months later, after all hell was breaking loose, four GCHQ, that's the name of their, the initials of their intelligence entity, went to the Guardian of London, and it said that the judge that works for Fox in New York that everybody's dumping on, he's right. We did it. We did do the spying at the request of the Obama intelligence community. They didn't mention names. They didn't mention President Obama himself. We can figure out who it was. This was the tip of the iceberg of the deep state trying to, A, prevent Donald Trump from getting elected president, and then, B, undermine his presidency, and C, eventually help Joe Biden beat him by, D, suppressing pro-Trump voices, including Trump's own, in big tech.
I totally agree. Everybody focuses on mail-in ballots or fraud in election. No, as Professor Epstein exposed years before the election, with Google and all these algorithms, they can suppress stuff 30, 40 points and steal the election that way.
Correct. They know what speech to suppress. They still suppress yours. They still suppress yours. And look at what you went through. You are a martyr to the First Amendment. I'm not saying that because I like you. I'm saying it's because it's true. The state of Connecticut wrote its own rule. It should be called the Alex Jones rule. Because in every state in the union, the expression of an opinion is protected, except in Connecticut and except if you're Alex Jones. And now they're still trying to suppress you.
And, they even misrepresent what
the voice is reaching more people than ever.
Exactly. They even misrepresent what the opinion was. It was out of context.
Correct. Correct. So that's.
So what are they so scared of? I'm not just tooting our horns. They're scared of you. They're scared of me. What is it they're so scared of we're doing?
They're scared of the truth, because the truth is that the government exists to perpetuate itself. It doesn't exist to preserve our liberty. And how does it perpetuate itself? By taxing more and regulating more, by taking more property and taking more liberty over and over and over again.
And they're doing it now.
No matter who's in the White House or which party controls the Congress, because they're the same. It's the big government party. It has a Democrat wing that likes individual welfare and war and taxes, and a Republican wing that likes corporate welfare and war and deficits.
So it doesn't sound like you have much faith in the new Congress.
I don't. I was cheering those 20 rebels on in the House of Representatives every day. Andy Biggs was on my show. I don't know if they collapsed. I don't know if they got the right consent. I'm sorry, Andy. I don't mean to criticize you. I'm your friend and fan. It's the congressman from Arizona that led the charge. I don't know what kind of concessions they got out of Kevin McCarthy. I think we'll find out soon. Are they going to raise the debt ceiling, or are they going to get the Democrats to cut spending?
We're going to end this first hour with Scott Ritter, who's going to tell us about we're on the cusp of nuclear war, and we'll just end it. We're not going to play this whole clip, but we'll play about 5 or 6 minutes of it. But here we go with Scott Ritter on we're on the cusp of nuclear war. Very important to end the program.
We are on the cusp of thermonuclear war. You know, I keep hearing people talk about comparing situation we face today with the Cuban Missile Crisis. Let me tell you something about the Cuban Missile Crisis. A, I was a baby, so I don't know anything firsthand. But B, I used to be good friends with a gentleman named William Polk, who was right there next to Kennedy when this happened. You know how we avoided nuclear war during the Cuban Missile Crisis? Diplomacy. Old-fashioned diplomacy. diplomacy. Americans talking to Russians, Russians talking to Americans. Politically, we may not have been able to do that up front through standard negotiations, but we had back channels that were approved by the President of the United States, by the General Secretary of the Communist Party, Khrushchev. But today we don't talk. And yeah, we have our intelligence, heads meeting, in Ankara and other places around the world, but this isn't a negotiation. We are in the midst of not just a heightening of tensions, but we lack the mechanisms to resolve these tensions. There is no diplomatic interaction worthy of the name between the United States and Russia today. I just had lunch with Anatoly Antonov, the ambassador to Russia. And he laments the fact that here's a man, regardless of what you think of Russia, of him personally, I don't care. I really don't. He's a man that sat down across from American negotiators during the administration of Barack Obama and negotiated the New START Treaty, the last arms control treaty in existence today between the United States and Russia. He was the Russian negotiator. All right. So he's a man who's accomplished far more than any of the people that currently reside in the State Department today in any capacity. Not a single one of them have accomplished what Anatoly Antonov has. And yet he's the ambassador of Russia to the United States, and he sits in a gilded cage. He's not allowed to interact. Nobody wants to interact with him. Nothing is happening except this. This is something he has spoken of, and senior State Department officials have spoken of. Because at the time I met him, it was on the 35th anniversary of the signing of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. It happens to be a treaty that I played an important part in implementing. It was signed in December 1987, began implementation in July 1st of 1988. There was a reunion of sorts of all the old INF hands, and we had somebody from the State Department speak there who is asked to be off the record, so I can't identify the individual or the content of their presentation, except to make the following note. There was a widespread recognition on the part of everybody who attended. The State Department no longer had any say whatsoever. Any say whatsoever in the nuclear posture of the United States of America. And that when it comes to nuclear issues and matters relating to the nuclear enterprise, the Department of Defense reigns supreme, is responsible for every aspect of the nuclear enterprise to this day, will include any notion of arms control negotiations. And when I brought this up to Ambassador Antonov, he said, well, sadly, because nothing exists in a vacuum, you can't expect the Russians to retain a certain expertise in arms control negotiation if it isn't exercised. It's like any muscle. If you don't exercise it, it atrophies. And the Russian negotiation component has likewise atrophied, and stepping into the vacuum is the Russian Ministry of Defense. So we have the world's two largest nuclear arsenals, and the people responsible for coming up with mechanisms to control these arsenals and hopefully diminish these arsenals are the very same people who are responsible for modernizing these arsenals and making these weapons more relevant to their respective national security postures. Ladies and gentlemen, this is insanity. Literally the definition of insanity. I can't come up with a quicker route towards global suicide than the one I just described. Nobody is talking disarmament. Everybody's talking arms race. The Russians are already well ahead. They've lapped us 22 times. They have new missiles, new systems out there that we can't match. This is a pro tip to all the wonderful U.S. senators out there. Diane, I hope one day your name is amongst them. Maybe you can whisper sanity in their ears.